night, not to punish him, but herself. To remind herself of who he'd sold their queen to, how profoundly mistaken she had been. And her parting line to him? It was a lie. A disgusting, hateful lie. Elide turned to Gavrielle again. I don't... The lion was gone. And for the cold flight over the army, then over the sea of darkness spread between it and the ancient city, even that wise voice who had whispered for the entirety of her life had gone quiet. Nezrin lingered by Salki, a hand on her mount's feathered side, and watched the party soar into the skies. The 20 rooks hadn't just been bearing Aelin Galathinius and her companions, Kaol and Irene included, but also more healers, supplies, and a few horses, hooded and corralled into wooden pens that the birds could carry, including Kaol's own horse, Farasha. I wish I could go with them, Borte sighed from where she was rubbing down Arcus. To fight alongside the Fae. Nezrin gave her an amused sidelong glance. You'll get that opportunity soon enough, if we march to Terrasen after this. Nearby, a distinctly male snort of derision sounded. Go eavesdrop on someone else, Yeren, Borte snapped toward her betrothed. But the Burlad captain only answered back. A fine commander you are. Mooning over the Fae like a doe-eyed girl. Borte rolled her eyes. When they teach me their killing techniques and I use them to wipe you off the map at our next gathering, you can tell me all about my mooning. The handsome captain stormed over from his own rook, and Nezrin ducked her head to hide her smile, finding herself immensely interested in brushing Salki's brown feathers. You'll be my wife then. According to your bargain with my hearth mother, he said, crossing his arms. It would be unseemly for you to kill your own husband in the gathering. Borte smiled with poisoned sweetness at her betrothed. I'll just have to kill you some other time, then. Yeren grinned back, the portrait of wicked amusement. Some other time, then, he promised. Nezrin didn't fail to note the light that gleamed in the captain's eyes, or the way Borte bit her lip just barely, her breath hitching. Yeren leaned in to whisper something in Borte's ear that made the girl's eyes widen, and apparently stunned her enough that when Yeren prowled to his rook, the portrait of swaggering arrogance, Borte blushed furiously and returned to cleaning her rook. Don't ask, she muttered. Nezrin held up her hands. I wouldn't dream of it. Borte's blush remained for minutes afterward, her cleaning near frantic. Easy, graceful steps sounded in the snow, and Nezrin knew who approached before the Rukin even straightened to attention. Not at the fact that Sartak was prince and heir, but that he was their captain. Of all the Rukin in this war, not just the Aridin Airy. He waved them off, scanning the night sky and rooks still soaring, shielded by Rowan Whitethorn from any enemy arrows that might find their mark. Sartak had barely come up beside Nezrin when Borte patted Arcus, tossed her brush into her supply pack, and walked into the night. Not to give them privacy, Nezrin realized. Not when Yeren prowled from his own rook side a heartbeat later, trailing Borte at a lazy pace. The girl looked over her shoulder once, and there was anything but annoyance on her face, as she noted Yeren at her heels. Sartak chuckled. At least they're a little more clear about it now. Nezrin snorted, brush gliding over Salki's feathers. I'm as confused as ever. The riders whose tents lie on either side of Borte's aren't. Nezrin's brows rose, but she smiled. Good. Not about the riders, but about them. War does strange things to people. Makes everything more urgent. He ran a hand down the back of her head, his fingers twining in her hair before he murmured in her ear. Come to bed. Heat flared through her body. We've a battle to launch tomorrow. Again. And a day of death has made me want to hold you, the prince said. giving her that disarming grin she had no defenses against. Especially as he added, "And do other things with you." Nezrin's toes curled in her boots. "Then help me finish cleaning Salki." The prince lunged so fast for the brush Borte had discarded that Nezrin laughed. Chapter 52. The Krokins had returned to their camp in the Fangs and waited. Manon and the 13 dismounted from the wyverns. Something churned in her gut with each step toward Glennis's fire. The strip of red fabric at the end of her braid became a millstone, weighing her head down. They were almost to Glennis's hearth when Bronwyn fell into step beside Manon. Astarin and Sorrel, trailing behind, tensed, but neither interfered. Especially not as Bronwyn asked, "What happened?" Manon glanced sidelong at her cousin. "I asked them to consider their position in this war." Bronwyn frowned at the sky, as if expecting to see the Iron Teeth trailing them.
"And?"
"And we'll see, I suppose."
"I thought you went there to rally them."
"I went," Manon said, baring her teeth, "to make them contemplate who they wish to be."
"I didn't think Iron Teeth were capable of such things."
Astarin snarled.
"Careful, witch."
Bronwyn threw her a mocking smile over his shoulder, then said to Manon,
"They let you walk out alive?"
"They did indeed."
"Will they fight? Will they turn on Morath and the other Iron Teeth?"
"I don't know."
She didn't. She truly didn't. Bronwyn fell silent for a few steps. Manon had just entered the ring of Glennis's hearth when the witch said,
"We shouldn't have bothered to hope, then."
Manon had no answer. So she walked away, the 13 not giving Bronwyn a passing glance. Manon found Glennis stirring the coals of her hearth, the sacred fire in its center a bright lick of flame that needed no wood to burn. A gift from Brannan, a piece of Terrasen's queen here. Glennis said,
"We must move out by mid-morning tomorrow. It was decided. We are to return to our home hearths."
Manon only sat on the rock nearest the crone, leaving the 13 to scrounge up whatever food they could find. Dorian had remained back with the wyverns. The last she'd seen of him minutes ago, a few Krokins had been approaching him. Either for pleasure or information, Manon didn't know. She doubted he'd share her bed again any time soon, especially if he remained hellbent on going to Morath. The thought didn't sit entirely well. Manon said to Glennis,
"Do you think the Iron Teeth are capable of change?"
"You would know that answer best."
She did, and she wasn't wholly certain she liked the conclusion she reached.
"Did Rhiannon think we could be?
Did she think I could be?"
Glennis's eyes softened, a hint of sorrow gracing them as she added another log to the flame.
"Your half-sister was your opposite in so many ways, and like your father in many regards. She was open and honest, and spoke her feelings regardless of the consequences. Brash, some called her. You might not know it from how they act now,"
the crone said, smirking a bit.
"But there were more than a few around these various hearths who disliked her, who didn't want to hear her lectures on our failing people, on how a better solution existed, how our peoples might find peace. Every day she spoke loudly and to anyone who might listen about the possibility of a united witch kingdom, the possibility of a future where we did not need to hide or be spread so thin. Many called her a fool, thought her a fool, especially when she went to look for you, to see if you agreed with her, despite what your bloody history suggested.
She'd died for that dream, that possibility of a future. Manon had killed her for it." Glennis said,
"So did Rhiannon think the Iron Teeth capable of change? She might have been the only witch in the Krokins who did. but she believed it with every shred of her being. Her sagging throat bobbed. She believed you two could rule it together, the Witch Kingdom. You would lead the Iron Teeth and she the Krakens, and together you would rebuild what fractured long ago. And now there is just me, juggling both. Now it is just you. Glennis's stare turned direct, unforgiving. A bridge between us. Manon accepted the plate of food Asterin handed her before the second sat beside her. Asterin said,
The Iron Teeth will turn. You'll see.
Sorrel grunted from the nearest rock, disagreement written across her face. Asterin gave Manon's third a vulgar gesture.
They'll turn. I swear it.
Glennis offered a small smile, but Manon said nothing as she dug into her food. Hope, she had told Elite all those months ago. But perhaps there would be none for them after all. Dorian lingered by the wyverns to answer the questions of the Krakens, who either did not want to, or were perhaps too skittish to ask the 13 what had occurred in the Farian Gap. No, a host was not rallying behind them. No, no one had tracked them. Yes, Manon had spoken to the Iron Teeth and asked them to join. Yes, they had gotten in and out alive. Yes, she had spoken as both Iron Teeth and Kraken. At least, Asterin had told him so on the long flight back here. Speaking to Manon, discussing their next steps. He didn't bother. Not yet. And when Asterin herself had gone quiet, he'd fallen deep into thought. Mulled over all he'd seen in the Farian Gap, every twisted hall and chamber and pit that reeked of pain and fear. What his father in Erewhon had built, the sort of kingdom he'd inherited. The word keys stirred, whispering. Dorian ignored them and ran a hand over Damaris's hilt. The gold remained warm despite the bitter cold. A sword of truth, yes, but also a reminder of what Otterlin had once been. What it might become again. If he did not falter, did not doubt himself, for whatever time he had left. He could make it right. All of it. He could make it right. Damaris heeded in silent comfort and confirmation. Dorian left the small crowd of Krakens and strode to a sliver of land overlooking a deadly plunge to a snow and rock-strewn chasm. Brutal mountains rippled away in every direction. But he cast his gaze to the southeast, to Morath, looming far beyond sight. He'd been able to shift into a raven that night in the Eelway Forest. Now he supposed he only needed to learn how to fly. He reached inward, to that eddy of raw power. Warmth bloomed in him, bones groaning, the world widening. He opened his beak, and a throaty caw cracked from him. Stretching out his sooty wings, Dorian began to practice. Chapter 53. Someone had set fire to her thigh. Not Aelin, because Aelin was gone, sealed in an iron sarcophagus and taken across the sea. But someone had burned her down to the bone, so thoroughly that the slightest of movements on wherever she lay, a bed, a cot, sent agony searing through her. Lysandra cracked open her eyes, a low groan working its way up her parched throat.
Easy,
a deep voice rumbled. She knew that voice, knew the scent, like a clear brook and new grass. Adian. She dragged her eyes, heavy and burning, toward the sound. His shining hair hung limp, matted with blood. And those turquoise eyes were smudged with purple beneath, and utterly bleak. Empty. A rough tent stood around them, the sole light provided by a lantern swinging in the bitter wind that crept in through the flaps. She'd been piled high with blankets, though he sat on an overturned bucket, still in his armor with nothing to warm him. Lysandra peeled her tongue off the roof of her mouth and listened to the world beyond the dim tent. Chaos. Shouting,
some men screaming.
We yielded, Peranth, Adian said hoarsely. We've been on the run for 2 days now. Another 3 days and we'll reach Orinth.
Her brows narrowed slightly. She'd been unconscious for that long?
We had to put you in a wagon with the other wounded. Tonight's the first we've dared to stop.
The strong column of his throat bobbed.
A storm struck to the south. It's slowed Morath down, just enough.
She tried to swallow against the dryness in her throat. The last she remembered, she'd been facing those Ilken. Never so aware of the limitations of a mortal body, of how even Aelin, who seemed so tall as she swaggered through the world, was dwarfed by the creatures. Then those claws had ripped into her leg, and she'd managed to make a perfect swing to take one of them down.
You rallied our army, he said. We lost the battle, but they didn't run in shame.
Lysandra managed to pull a hand from beneath the blankets and strained for the jug of water set beside the bed. Adian was instantly in motion, filling a cup. But as her fingers closed around it, she noted their color, their shape. Her own hands, her own arm.
You shifted,
Adian said, noting her widened eyes.
While the healer was sewing up your leg, I think the pain... You shifted back into this body.
Horror, roaring and nauseating, roiled through her.
How many saw?
Her first words, each as rough and dry as sandpaper.
Don't worry about it.
She gulped down the water.
They all know?
A solemn nod.
What did you tell them about Aelin?
That she has been off on a vital quest with Rowan and the others, and that it is so secret we do not dare speak of it.
Are the soldiers...
Don't worry about it,
he repeated. But she could see it in his face, the strain. They had rallied to their queen, only to realize it had been an illusion, that the might of the Firebringer was not with them, would not shield them against the army at their heels.
I'm sorry,
she breathed. Adian took the empty cup of water before he gripped her hand, squeezing gently.
I am sorry, Lysandra, for all of it.
His throat bobbed again.
When I saw the Ilken, when I saw you against them.
Useless, lying bitch. The words he'd thrown at her, raged at her, dragged her further from the haze of pain, sharpened her focus.
You did this,
he said, voice lowering.
For Terrison. For Aelin. You were willing to die for it, gods above.
I was.
Her words came out cold as steel. Adian blinked as she withdrew her hand from his. Her leg ached and throbbed, but she managed to sit up, to meet his stare.
I have been degraded and humiliated in so many ways.
For so many years, she said, voice shaking. Not from fear, but from the tidal wave that swept up everything inside her, burning alongside the wound in her leg.
But I have never felt as humiliated as I did when you threw me into the snow. When you called me a lying bitch in front of our friends and allies.
Never.
She hated the angry tears that stung her eyes.
I was once forced to crawl before men. And gods above, I nearly crawled for you these months. And yet it takes me nearly dying for you to realize that you've been an ass. It takes me nearly dying for you to see me as human again.
He didn't hide the regret in his eyes. She had spent years reading men, and knew that every agonized emotion in his face was genuine. But it didn't erase what had been said and done. Lysandra put a hand on her chest, right over her own shredded heart.
I wanted it to be you, she said. After Wesley, after all of it. I wanted it to be you. What Aelin asked me to do had no bearing on that. What she asked me to do never felt like a burden, because I wanted it to be you in the end anyway.
She didn't wipe away the tears that slipped down her cheeks.
And you threw me into the snow.
Adian slid to his knees, reached for her hand.
I will never stop regretting it, Lysandra. I will never forget a second of it, never stop hating myself for it, and I am so—
Don't. She snatched back her hand. Don't kneel. Don't bother.
She pointed to the tent flaps.
There's nothing I have left to say to you. Or you to me.
Agony again rippled across his face, but she shut out what it did to her. What it did to her to see Adian rise to his feet, groaning softly at some unspecified ache in his powerful body. For a few breaths, he just stared down at her. Then he said,
I meant every promise I made to you on that beach in Skulls Bay.
And then he was gone. Adian had spent a good portion of his life hating himself for the various things he'd done. But seeing the tears on Lysandra's face because of him, he'd never felt like more of a bastard. He barely heard the soldiers around him, tense and skittish in the snow that blew between their quickly erected tents. How many more wounded would die tonight? He'd already pulled rank to get Lysandra care from the best healers they had left. And still it was not good enough, the healers not gifted magically. And despite Lysandra's quicker healing abilities, they'd still had to stitch up her leg, and now changed the bandages every few hours. The wound had sealed, mercifully, likely fast enough to avoid infection. Many of the injured amongst them could not say the same. The rotting wounds, the festering blood within their veins. Every morning, more and more bodies had been left behind in the snow, the ground too frozen and with no time to burn them. Food for Erewhon's beasts, the soldiers murmured when they'd moved out. They might as well offer the enemy a free meal. Adian shut down that talk, along with any sort of hissing about their flight and defeat. By the time they'd camped tonight, a good third of the soldiers, members of the Bane included, had been assigned various tasks to keep them busy. To make them so tired after a day's fleeing that they didn't have the energy to grumble. Adian aimed for his own tent, set just outside the healer's ring of tents where Lysandra lay. Giving her a private tent had been another privilege he'd used his rank to acquire. He'd almost reached the small tent. No use in building his full war tent when they'd be running again in a few hours. When he spotted the figures huddled by the fire outside, he slowed his steps to a stalking gait. Ren rose to his feet, his face tight beneath his heavy hood. Yet it was the man beside Ren who made Adian's temper hone itself into a dangerous thing.
Darrow,
he said.
I would have thought you'd be in Orinth by now.
The lord bundled in furs did not smile.
I came to deliver the message myself, since my most trusted courier seems inclined to select another allegiance.
The old bastard knew then, about Lysandra's masquerading as Aelin, and Nox Owen's role in moving their army out of his grasp.
Let's get it over with then, Adian said.
Ren tensed, but said nothing. Darrow's thin lips curved in a cruel smile.
For your acts of reckless rebellion, for your failure to heed our command and take your troops where they were ordered, for your utter defeat at the border and the loss of Peranth, you are stripped of your rank.
Adian barely heard the words.
Consider yourself now a soldier in the Bane, if they'll have you. And as for the imposter you've paraded around.
A sneer toward the healer's tents. Adian snarled. Darrow's eyes narrowed.
If she is again caught pretending to be Princess Aelin.
Adian almost ripped out his throat at that word, princess.
Then we will have little choice but to sign her execution order.
I'd like to see you try.
I'd like to see you stop us.
Adian smirked.
Oh, it's not me who you'll be dealing with. Good luck to any man who tries to harm a shifter that powerful.
Darrow ignored the promise and held out a hand.
The Sword of Orinth, if you will.
Ren started.
You're out of your mind, Darrow.
Adian just stared. The ancient lord said,
That sword belongs to a true general of Terrasen, to its prince commander. As you are no longer the bearer of that title, the sword shall return to Orinth, until a new, appropriate bearer can be determined.
Ren growled,
That sword is in our possession, Darrow, because of Adian. Had he not won it back, it would still be rusting in Otterland's trove.
He will always have our gratitude for it, if only in that regard, at least.
A dull roar filled Adian's head. Darrow's hand remained extended. He deserved this, he supposed, for his failure on these battlefields, his failure to defend the land he'd promised Aelin he'd save, for what he'd done to the shifter who had held his heart from the moment she'd shredded into those Volg soldiers in the sewers of Rifthold. Adian unbuckled the ancient sword from his belt. Ren let out a sound of protest. But he ignored the lord and tossed the Sword of Orinth to Darrow. The lightness where that sword had been threw off his balance. The old man stared at the sword in his hands, even went so far as to run a finger over the bone pommel. The hateful bastard unable to contain his awe. Adian just said,
The Sword of Orinth is only a piece of metal and bone. It always has been. It's what the sword inspires in the bearer that matters. The true heart of Terrasen.
Poetic of you, Adian,
was Darrow's reply, before he turned on his heel, aiming for wherever his escort waited beyond the camp's edge.
Your commander, Killian, is now General of the Bane. Report to him for orders.
The swirling snows devoured the old lord within a few steps. Ren snarled,
Like hell you aren't, General. The lords of Terrasen decree it, and so it shall be. Why aren't you fighting this?
Ren's eyes blazed.
You just handed over that sword.
I don't give a shit.
Adian didn't bother to keep his exhaustion, his disappointment and anger from his voice.
Let him have the sword and the army. I don't give a shit.
Ren didn't stop him, as Adian ducked into his tent and didn't emerge until dawn. The lords of Terrasen had stripped General Ashriver of his sword. The word spread from campfire to campfire, rippling through the ranks. The soldier was new to the Bane, had been accepted into their ranks only this summer. An honor, even with war upon them. An honor, though the soldier's family had wept to see him depart. To fight for Prince Adian, to fight for Terrasen, it had been worth it, the weight of leaving his farmstead home behind. Leaving behind that sweet-faced farmer's daughter whom he'd never gotten the chance to so much as kiss. It had been worth it then, but not now. The friends he'd made in the months of training and fighting were dead. Huddled around the too small campfire, the soldier was the last of them, the fresh-faced recruits who'd been so eager to test themselves against the Volg at the start of summer. In the dead heart of winter, he now called himself a fool, if he bothered to speak at all. Words had become unnecessary. Foreign. As foreign as his half-frozen body, which never warmed, though he slept as close to the fire as he dared. If sleep found him, with the screaming of the wounded and dying, the knowledge of what hunted them northward. There was no one left to help them, save them. The queen they'd thought amongst them had been a lie, a shapeshifter's deception. Where Aelin Galathinius now fought, what she had deemed more important than them, he didn't know. The frigid night pressed in, threatening to devour the small fire before him. The soldier inched closer to the flame, shuddering beneath his worn cloak, every ache and scrape from the day throbbing. He wouldn't abandon this army, though. Not as some of the others were murmuring. Even with Prince Adian stripped of his title, even with their queen gone, he wouldn't abandon this army. He had sworn an oath to protect Terrasen, to protect his family. He'd hold to it, even if he now knew he'd never see them again. Snow was still falling when they renewed their flight. It fell for the next 2 days, chasing them northward for each long mile. Darrow's decree had little bearing. Killian outright refused to make any calls without Adian's approval, refused to don armor fitting of his rank, refused to take the war tent. Adian knew he'd earned that loyalty long ago, just as the Bane had earned his. But it didn't stop him from hating it just a bit, from wishing Killian would take over in full. Lysandra's leg was healed enough to ride, but he saw little of her. She kept to Ren's side, the two of them traveling near the healers, should her stitches pull. When Adian did glimpse her, she often stared him down until he wanted to vomit. By the third day, the scouts were rushing to them, reporting that Morath had gained and was closing in behind, fast. Adian knew how this would go, saw every trudging step and hunger-tight face around him. Orinth was half a day off. Were it over easy terrain, they might stand a chance of getting behind its ancient walls. But between them and the city lay the Florine River, too wide to cross without boats, the nearest bridge too far south to risk. At this time of year, it still might not yet have frozen. And even so, with the river so wide and deep, the layer of ice that often coated it only went so far. For their army to cross, they'd have to risk the ice collapsing. There were other ways to Orinth, to go straight north into the Staghorns and cut back south to the city nestled at their foot. But each hour delayed allowed Morath's host to gain ground. Adian was riding beside Killian when Elgin galloped up beside them, horse puffing curls of hot air into the snow-thick day.
"The river is 10 miles straight ahead," Elgin said. "We have to make our decision now."
To risk the bridge to the south, or the time it'd take to go to the long route northward. Ren, spotting their gathering, urged his horse closer. Killian waited for the order. Adian arched a brow.
"You're the general."
"Horseshit," Killian spat. Adian only turned to Elgin.
"Any word on the status of the ice?"
Elgin shook his head.
"No word on it, or the bridge."
Endless whirling snow lay ahead. Adian didn't dare glance behind at the trudging, stooping lines of soldiers. Ren, as silently as he'd come, pulled back to where he rode at Lysandra's side. Wings fluttered through the wind and snow. And then a falcon was shooting skyward, one leg awkwardly straight beneath it.
"Keep riding,"
was all Adian said to his companions. Lysandra returned within an hour. She addressed Ren and Ren alone. And then the young lord was galloping to Adian's side, where Killian and Elgin still rode. Ren's face had gone ashen.
"There's no ice on the Florine, and Morath scouts snuck ahead and raised the southern bridge."
"They're herding us northward,"
Elgin murmured. Ren nodded.
"They'll be upon us by tomorrow morning."
They would not have time to consider making a run for the northern entrance to Orinth. And with the Florine mere miles ahead, too wide and deep to cross, too frigid to dare swim, and Morath closing in from behind, they were utterly trapped.
Chapter 54. Kaol hand-fed an apple to Farasha, the beautiful black mare skittish after her unprecedented flight. It seemed even Hellas's horse could be frightened. Though Kaol supposed any wise person would find dangling hundreds of feet in the air to be unnerving.
"Someone else could do that for you."
Leaning against the stable wall of the keep, Irene watched him work,
monitoring each deeply limping step.
You should rest.
Kaol shook his head.
She doesn't know what the hell is happening. I'd like to try to calm her before she beds down.
Before battle tomorrow.
Before they might stand a chance of actually saving Aniel. He was still working through all that had transpired these months he'd been gone. The battles and losses. Where Dorian had gone with Manon and the 13. Kaol could only pray his friend was successful, and that he didn't take it upon himself to forge the lock. Needing to unravel all he'd learned, he left Aelin and the others near the Great Hall to find whatever food they could, immediately bringing Farasha down here with him. Mostly for the safety of everyone around the Muniki horse, since Farasha had tried to take a chunk out of the soldier nearest her the moment her hood had come off. Even the hood hadn't concealed from her what exactly was happening to the oversized crate they'd buckled her into. But Farasha hadn't bitten off his hand before she nibbled at the apple, so Kaol prayed she'd forgive him for the rough flight. Part of him half wondered if the mare knew that his back ached, that he needed his cane, but that he chose to be here. He ran a hand down her ebony mane, then patted her strong neck.
Ready to trample some Volg grunts tomorrow, my friend?
Farasha huffed, angling a dark eye at him as if to say, are you? Kaol smiled, and Irene laughed softly.
I should head back to the hall, his wife said. See who needs help.
But she lingered. Their eyes met over Farasha's powerful back. He came around the horse, still mindful of her biting.
I know,
he said quietly.
Irene angled her head.
No, what?
Kaol interlaced their fingers, and then laid their hands atop her still flat abdomen.
Oh,
was all Irene said, her mouth popping open.
How?
Kaol's heart thundered.
It's true, then.
Her golden eyes scanned his.
Do you want it to be?
Kaol slid a hand against her cheek.
More than I ever realized.
Irene's smile was wide and lovely enough to fracture his heart.
It's true,
she breathed.
How far along?
Almost 2 months.
He studied her stomach, the place that would soon swell with the child growing inside her. Their child.
You didn't tell me, I'm assuming, because you didn't want me to worry?
Irene bit her lip.
Something like that.
He snorted.
And when you were waddling around, belly near bursting?
Irene whacked his arm.
I'm not going to waddle.
Kaol laughed and tugged her into his arms.
You'll waddle beautifully, was what I meant to say.
Irene's laughter reverberated into him, and Kaol kissed the top of her head, her temple.
We're having a child,
he murmured onto her hair. Her arms came around him.
We are,
she whispered.
But how did you know?
My father,
Kaol grumbled,
apparently possesses better observational skills than I do.
He felt more than saw her cringe.
You're not angry I didn't tell you?
No. I would have appreciated hearing it from your lips first. But I understand why you didn't want to say anything yet. Stupid as it might be.
He added, nipping at her ear. Irene jabbed him in the ribs, and he laughed again. Laughed.
Even though every day they'd fought in this battle, every opponent he'd faced, he'd dreaded making a fatal mistake,
had been unable to forget that should he fall, he'd be taking them both with him. Her arms tightened around him, and Irene nestled her head against his chest.
You'll be a brilliant father, she said softly. The most brilliant one to ever exist.
High praise indeed. Coming from a woman who wanted to toss me from the highest window of the Torre a few months ago.
A healer would never be so unprofessional.
Kaol grinned, and breathed in her scent before he pulled back and brushed his mouth against hers.
I am happier than I can ever express, Irene, to share this with you. Anything you need, I am yours to command.
Her lips twitched upward. Dangerous words. But Kaol ran his thumb over her wedding band.
I'll have to win this war quickly then, so I can have our house built by the summer.
She rolled her eyes. A noble reason to defeat Erewhon. Kaol stole another kiss from her.
As much as I would like to show you just how much I am at your command,
he said against her mouth,
I have another matter to deal with before bed.
Irene's brows rose. He grimaced.
I need to introduce Aelin to my father before they run into each other.
The man hadn't been near the hall when they'd arrived, and Kaol had been too worried for Farasha's well-being to bother hunting him down. Irene cringed, though amusement sparked in her eyes.
Is it bad if I want to join you and bring snacks?
Kaol slung an arm around her shoulders, giving Farasha a farewell stroke before they left. Despite the cane, each step was limping, and the pain in his back lanced down his legs. But it was secondary. All of it, even the damned war, was secondary to the woman at his side, to the future they'd build together. As well as Irene's conversation with Kaol had gone, that's how badly things went between Aelin Galathinius and his father. Irene didn't bring snacks, but that was only because by the time they reached the Great Hall, they had intercepted his father, storming toward the room where Aelin and her companions had gone for a reprieve.
Father,
Kaol said, falling into step beside him. Irene said nothing, monitoring Kaol's movements. The pain in his back had to be great if he was limping this deeply, even while her magic refilled. She had no idea where he'd left his chair, if it had been crushed under falling debris. She prayed it had not. His father snapped.
You fail to wake me when the Queen of Terrasen arrives at my castle. It wasn't a priority.
Kaol halted before the door that opened into the small chamber that had been vacated for the queen, and knocked. A grunt was the only confirmation, before Irene's husband shouldered open the door enough to poke his head inside.
My father,
Kaol said to whoever was inside, presumably the queen,
would like to see you.
Silence. Then the rustling of clothes and steps. Irene kept back as Aelin Galathinius appeared, her face and hands clean, but clothes still dirty. At her side stood that towering silver-haired Fey warrior, Rowan Whitethorn, whom the royals had spoken of with such fear and respect months ago. In the room, Lady Elide sat against the far wall, a tray of food beside her, and the giant white wolf lay sprawled on the ground, monitoring with half-lidded eyes. A shock to see the shift. To realize these Fae might be powerful and ancient, but they still had one foot in the forest. The queen, it seemed, preferred the form as well, her delicately pointed ears half hidden by her unbound hair. Behind her, there was no sign of the golden-haired, melancholy warrior Gabriel, or the utterly terrifying Lorcan. Thank Silba for that, at least. Aelin left the door open, though their two court members remained seated, bored, almost. Well now, was all the queen said as she stepped into the hall. Kaol's father looked over the warrior prince at her side. Then he turned his head toward Kaol and said,
I assume they met in Wendlin, after you sent her there.
Irene tensed at the taunting in the man's voice. Bastard. Horrible bastard. Aelin clicked her tongue. Yes, yes, let's get all of that out of the way. Though, I don't think your son really regrets it. Does he? Aelin's eyes shifted to Irene, and Irene tried not to flinch under that turquoise and gold stare. different from the fire she'd beheld that night in Inish, but still full of that razor-sharp awareness. Different. They were both different from the girls they'd been. A smile curved the queen's mouth. I think he made out rather well for himself. She frowned up at her consort. Irene, at least, doesn't seem like the sort to hog the blankets and snore in one's ear all night. Irene coughed as Prince Rowan only smiled at the queen.
I don't mind your snoring, he said mildly.
Aelin's mouth twitched when she turned to Kaol's father. Irene's own laughter died at the lack of light on the man's face. Kaol was tense as a drawn bowstring, as the queen said to his father. Don't waste your breath on taunts. I'm tired and hungry, and it won't end well for you.
This is my keep.
Aelin made a good show of gaping at the ceiling, the walls, the floors. Is it really? Irene had to duck her head to hide her grin. So did Kaol. But Aelin said to the Lord of Aniel, I trust you're not going to get in our way. A line in the sand. Irene's breath caught in her throat. Kaol's father said simply,
Last I looked, you were not queen of Otterlin.
No, but your son is hand to the king, which means he outranks you. Aelin smiled with horrific sweetness at Kaol. Haven't you told him that? Irene and Aelin were no longer the girls they'd been in Inish, yes. But that wildfire still remained in the queen's spirit. Wildfire touched with insanity. Kaol shrugged.
I figured I'd tell him when the time arose.
His father glowered. Prince Rowan, however, said to the man,
You've defended and prepared your people admirably. We have no plans to take that from you.
I don't need the approval of fey brutes,
the lord sneered. Aelin clapped Rowan on the shoulder. Brute! I like that. Better than buzzard, right? Irene had no idea what the queen was talking about. But she held in her laugh anyway. Aelin sketched a mocking bow to the lord of Aniel. On that lovely parting note, we're going to finish up our dinners. Enjoy your evening, we'll see you on the battlements tomorrow, and please, do rotten hell. Then Aelin was turning away, a hand guiding her husband inside. But not before the queen threw a grin over her shoulder to Irene and Kaol, and said, eyes bright, with joy and warmth this time. Congratulations! How she knew? Irene had no idea. But the Fae possessed a preternatural sense of smell. Irene smiled all the same as she bowed her head, just before Aelin slammed the door in the Lord of Aniel's face. Kaol turned to his father, any hint of amusement expertly hidden.
Well, you saw her.
Kaol's father shook with what Irene supposed was a combination of rage and humiliation, and stalked away. It was one of the finest sights Irene had ever seen. From Kaol's smile, she knew her husband felt the same.
What a horrible man.
Elide finished off her chicken leg before handing the other to Fenris, who had shifted back into his fey form. He tore into it with a growl of appreciation.
Poor Lord Kaol.
Aelin, her aching legs stretched out before her, as she leaned against the wall, finished off her own portion of chicken, then dug into a hunk of dark bread. Poor Kaol, poor his mother, poor his brother, poor everyone who has to deal with him. At the lone, narrow window of the room, monitoring the dark army hundreds of feet below, Rowan snorted.
You were in rare form tonight.
Aelin saluted him with her hunk of hearty oaten bread. Anyone who interrupts my dinner risks paying the price. Rowan rolled his eyes, but smiled. Just as Aelin had seen him smile when they'd both scented what was on Irene. The child in her. She was happy for Irene. For them both.
Kaol deserved that joy, perhaps more than anyone, as much as her own mate. Aelin didn't let the thoughts travel further. Not as she finished her bread and came to the window, leaning against Rowan's side. He slid an arm around her shoulders, casual and easy. None of them mentioned Maeve. Elid and Fenris continued eating in silence, giving them what privacy they could in the small, bare room they'd be sharing, sleeping on bedrolls. The Lord of Aniel, it seemed, did not share her appreciation for luxury or basic comforts for his guests, like hot baths or beds.
The men are terrified,
Rowan said, gazing out at the levels of the keep below.
You can smell it.
They've held this keep for days now. They know what's waiting for them at dawn.
Their fear,
Rowan said, his jaw tightening,
is proof they do not trust our allies. Proof they don't trust the Coggin's army to actually save them. It will make for sloppy fighters. Could create a weakness where there shouldn't be one.
Perhaps you should have told Kaol, Aelin said. He could give them some motivational speech.
I have a feeling Kaol has given them plenty. This sort of fear rots the soul.
What's to be done for it, then?
Rowan shook his head. I don't know.
But she sensed he did know. Sensed that he wanted to say something else. And either their current company or some sort of hesitation barred him. So Aelin didn't push, and surveyed the battlements with their patrolling soldiers, the sprawling dark army beyond. Baying cries and howls rent the night, the sounds unearthly enough that they dragged a shudder down her spine.
Is a land battle easier or worse than one at sea?
Aelin asked her husband, her mate, peering at his tattooed face. She'd only faced the ships in Skull's Bay, and even that had been over relatively quickly. And against the Ilken who'd swarmed them in the stone marshes, it had been more an extermination than anything.
Not what awaited them tomorrow.
Not what her friends had fought on the narrow sea, while she and Manon had been in the mirror, then with Maeve on the beach. Rowan considered.
They're just as messy, but in different ways.
I'd rather fight on land, Fenris grumbled. Because no one likes the smell of wet dog? Aelin asked over her shoulder. Fenris laughed.
Exactly because of that.
At least he was smiling again. Rowan's mouth twitched, but his eyes were hard as he surveyed the enemy army.
Tomorrow's battle will be just as brutal,
he said.
But the plan is sound.
They'd be on the battlements with Kaol, readying for any desperate maneuvers Morath might attempt when they found themselves being herded and crushed by the Coggin's army. Elid would be with Irene and the other healers in the Great Hall, helping the injured. Where Lorcan and Gavriel would be, Aelin could only assume. Both had peeled off upon arriving, the latter taking watch somewhere and the former likely brooding. But they'd probably be fighting right alongside them. As if her thoughts had summoned him, Gavriel slipped into the room.
The army looks quiet enough,
he said by way of greeting. Then unceremoniously dropped to the floor beside Fenris and hauled the platter of chicken toward him.
The men are rife with fear, though. Days of defending these walls have worn on them.
Rowan nodded. Not bothering to tell the lion they'd just discussed this, as Gavriel ripped into the food.
We'll have to make sure they don't balk tomorrow, then.
Indeed.
I was wondering,
Elid said to none of them in particular, after a moment.
Since Maeve is an imposter, who would rule Dorinel if she was banished with all the other Volg?
Or burned to a crisp, Fenris muttered. Aelin might have smiled grimly, but Elid's question settled into her. Gavriel slowly set down the chicken. Rowan's arm dropped from Aelin's shoulders. His pine-green eyes were wide.
You?
Aelin blinked. There are others from Mab's line,
Galen or Adian?
The throne passes through the maternal line to a female only. Or it should have,
Rowan said.
You're the sole female with a direct, undiluted claim to Mab's bloodline.
And your household, Rowan, Gavriel said. Someone in your household would have a claim on Mora's half of the throne.
Selene. It would go to her.
Even as a prince, Rowan's own heritage connecting him to Mora's bloodline had thinned to the point of being in name only. Aelin was more closely related to Elide, probably to Kaol too, than she was to Rowan, despite their distant ancestry. Well, Selene can have it, Aelin said, wiping her hands of dust that was not there. Doranel's hers. She wouldn't set foot in that city again, Maeve or no. She wasn't sure if that made her a coward. She didn't dare reach for her magic's comforting rumble. The little folk truly knew, Fenris mused, rubbing his jaw.
What you were.
They had always known her, the little folk. Had saved her life 10 years ago. Had saved their lives these past few weeks. They had known her and left gifts for her.
Tribute, she'd thought, to Brannan's heir.
Not to,
Gavriel murmured.
The Faerie Queen of the West.
Silence. Aelin blurted, is that an actual title?
It is now, Fenris muttered. Aelin shot him a look. With Selene as the Fae Queen of the East,
Rowan mused. No one spoke for a good minute. Aelin sighed up at the ceiling. What's another fancy title, I suppose? They didn't answer. And Aelin tried not to let the weight of that title settle too heavily.
All it implied. That she might not only look after the little folk on this continent, but with the cadre, begin a new homeland for any Fae who might wish to join them. For any Fae who had survived the slaughter in Terrasen 10 years ago and might wish to return.
A fool's dream. One that she would likely not come to see, to create.
The Faerie Queen of the West,
Aelin said, tasting the words on her tongue, wondering how long she'd get to call herself such. From the heavy quiet, she knew her companions were contemplating the same. And from the pain in Rowan's eyes, the rage and determination, she knew he was already calculating if it might somehow spare her from the sacrificial altar. But that would come later. After tomorrow.
If they survived.
There was a gate, and eternity lay beyond its black archway. But not for her.
No. There would be no afterworld for her.
The gods had built another coffin, this time crafting it of that dark, glimmering stone.
Stone her fire could never melt. Never pierce.
The only way to escape was to become it, dissolve into it like sea foam on a beach. Every breath was thinner than the previous one.
They had not put any holes in this coffin.
Beyond her confines, she knew a second coffin sat beside hers.
New, because the muffled screams within still reached her here.
Two princesses, one golden and one silver, one young and one ancient. Both the cost of sealing that gate to eternity. The air would run out soon. She had already lost too much of it in her frantic clawing at the stone.
Her fingertips pulsed where she'd broken nails and skin.
Those female screams became quieter. She should accept it. Embrace it.
Only when she did would the lid open.
The air was so hot.
So precious.
She could not get out, could not get out. Aelin hauled herself into waking. The room remained dark, her companion's deep breathing holding steady. Open, fresh air.
The stars just visible through the narrow window. No word stone coffin, no gate poised to devour her whole.
But she knew they were watching, somehow.
Those wretched gods. Even here they were watching. Waiting. A sacrifice. That's all she was to them.
Nausea churned in her gut. But Aelin ignored it, ignored the tremors rippling through her, the heat under her skin.
Aelin turned onto her side, nestling closer into Rowan's solid warmth.
Elena's muffled screams still ringing in her ears.
No.
She would not be helpless again.
Chapter 55. Being in female form wasn't entirely what Dorian had expected. The way he walked, the way he moved his hips and legs. Strange. So disconcertingly strange. If any of the Crokins had noticed a young witch amongst them pacing in circles, crouching and stretching her legs, they didn't halt their work as they readied the camp to depart. Then there was the matter of his breasts, which he'd never imagined to be so cumbersome. Not unpleasant, but the shock of bumping his arms into them, the need to adjust his posture to accommodate their slight weight, was still fresh after a few hours. He'd kept the transformation as simple as he could. He'd picked a young Crokin the night before, one of the novices who might not be needed at all hours or noticed very often, and studied her until she likely deemed him a lech. This morning, the image of her face and form still planted in his mind, he'd come to the edge of the camp and simply willed it. Well, perhaps not simply. The shift remained not an entirely enjoyable sensation while bones adjusted, his scalp tingling with the long brown hair that grew out in shining waves, nose tickling as it was reshaped into a delicate curve. For long minutes, he'd only stared down at himself, at the delicate hands, the smaller wrists. Amazing how much strength the tiny bones contained. A few subtle pats between his legs had told him enough about